Hello, this is Pastor Stephen Anderson from Faithful Word Baptist Church in Tempe, Arizona, and today I want to talk with you about John 1:9. In English, this verse says, "That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world." Let's look at it in Greek. En to phos to alithinon, o photisi panda anthropon, erhomenon, eston kosmon. Let's go through this word by word. Now, en is a word that you should know from John 1:1, and arhi en o logos. En means was, okay? En to phos, was the light, all right? Now, the word light, phos, should remind you of some English words that are derived from it, like phosphorescent or photon. Phos means light. To phos means the light. Now, so far, we've learned three singular nominative words for the, okay? This is the in the singular nominative case, and we have the masculine, the feminine, and the neuter form of it, okay? So O is masculine, E is feminine, and to is neuter. Like if you remember, the vine was E ambelos, all right? Whereas God was O theos. Now we have to phos. When we see to phos, we know this is a neuter word, okay? The light, to phos, all right? Now, it says, en to phos to alithinon. Now, alithinon is another form of the word we keep seeing over and over again. In John 14:6, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth," e alithia, the truth and the life. And we've seen other forms of the adjective true. This one right here is going to be our neuter form in the singular nominative case. So we have en to phos to alithinon, was the light the true? And that's the Greek way of saying was the true light. Okay, we saw that in John 15:1, if you remember, where Jesus said, "I am the true vine." He said, "Ego imi e ambelos e alithini." All right, so the vine, the true, meant the true vine. This is just one way of doing adjectives in Greek. En to phos to alithinon, was the true light. Now, you notice that a word is not here that we have in English, because in English, this verse starts out, "That was the true light." In Greek, it just says, "was the true light." That's why in your King James Bible, the word "that" is in italics. Whenever a word is in italics in the King James, what it's usually there for is to show you that this is a word that has been added in the English so that it will make sense. Basically, just it's something that had to be added in the translation or the verse wouldn't make sense. And they're just kind of showing you, okay, here's what we had to add to say it in English. In English, it would not be grammatically correct to say, "was the true light." Okay, we have to say, "that was the true light." Whereas in Greek, you can just say, "was the true light," and the "that" is just understood to be there, even though you're not saying it, okay? So a lot of people will make the mistake of saying, well, you know, when we read the King James, we should remove the italicized words. No, the italicized words are there for a reason. You know, in order for it to be properly translated, you have to have the word "that" to say this in English. But because it's not in the original, that's why they put it in italics. You know, I hope you understand that. If you don't understand that, you probably shouldn't be learning Greek, because that's a pretty simple concept. But anyway, it says, en to phos to alithinon, okay, which means that was the true light. O photisi, and O is the word "the," but in this case, it doesn't mean "the." In this case, it's acting as "that" or "which." Okay, so en to phos to alithinon, o photise, which lighteth. Okay, notice the similarity between the noun phos, the light, and photisi, which means lights or lighteth. Okay, the verb form. Third person singular, o photisi panda. Now, panda means all, okay? Panda anthropon. Okay, so panda anthropon means every man, all right? All men, every man, okay? Now, let me say a word about the pronunciation here. This is another pronunciation exception. Thankfully, Greek is very phonetic, and there are very few exceptions, but there are certain little combinations of letters that you have to get used to. Like, for example, this letter is P, right? But when it has a me in front of it, it's a B sound, B, like a second letter of our alphabet. Well, this is another one of those exceptions. The letter Toph is pronounced with a T sound, a T sound, but when it has knee in front of it, it becomes a D sound, like dog in English, all right? So this word is actually pronounced panda, all right? So ophotizi panda anthropon. Now the word anthropon means man. Pretty easy to learn because we have some English words that are derived from this, like anthropology, right? The study of people, study of mankind. Anthropon, anthropology, or a philanthropist. Okay, those are some words that are derived from the Greek word anthropon. All right, and then we have this word, erhomenon. And we're going to get into this verb form in another lesson. But this verb form is super common when you're reading a Greek New Testament. And so you're going to definitely want to get used to seeing that O, ni ending, the omicron ni at the end of the word, okay? We'll talk about it in detail in a future lesson. But basically what this word means is it's derived from the Greek word for come, okay? And what this means when it says ophotizi panda anthropon erhomenon, it means every man which cometh, or that is coming, you know, that cometh eis ton kosmon, into the world. Because that was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. So this erhomenon means that cometh, or that comes. Okay? So, panda anthropon erhomenon. Every man coming, or that comes, or that cometh, eis ton kosmon, into the world. And then you'll notice right here, again, something familiar from old lessons. The O-N ending is an accusative ending. Remember John 1:1, pros ton theon? Okay? Pros was a preposition that took the accusative case following it. So that's why it was pros ton theon, with God. Okay? Well, eis also takes an accusative, ton kosmon, into the world. Okay. Now let me give you a little trick that's been really helpful for me and a lot of other people to remember which case to use with which preposition. Because, you know, as we've talked about things, I've mentioned to you that a lot of prepositions take the genitive case, a lot of prepositions are going to take the dative case, a lot of prepositions are going to take the accusative case. You know, how do you know which one to use? Well, if you remember, accusative case is usually used for what we would have in English as the direct object, the one who's directly receiving the action of the verb. The dative case is akin to the indirect object in English. It answers the question to whom or for whom. And then the nominative case, you remember, was the subject case. And then the accusative, or we already talked about accusative, which one am I missing? Genitive is the possessive or corresponds with the English preposition of or from, okay? But if you remember, prepositions can take any of the three, accusative, dative, or genitive. So how do you know which one to use? Well, here's something that I like to use just to help me remember which one to use, okay? Because a lot of prepositions have to do with space or time, where things are located or where they're going or where they're coming from. And so this chart has been something that's been helpful to me. And what this chart represents is what's in the circle is just kind of where you're at. I mean, this is what's there, okay? And that's going to be represented by the dative case. Like, for example, something that was in something else, okay, was in the dative case. Anarchy, in the beginning, right? It's just there, okay? So prepositions that have to do with something that's just spatially located in a certain place, like anarchy, in the beginning, whether it be time or space, are going to be dative, okay? Now, these are things that are going there, and these are things that are coming from there, okay? So going there is going to be accusative, and coming out of there is going to be genitive. Now, maybe this is helpful to you, and maybe it's not. But honestly, this has been something that's helped me remember the difference with prepositions between, you know, accusative, dative, and genitive case. So, for example, cometh into the world, okay, you know, you're going into the circle, right? You're going into the world. So that's why it's accusative, okay? When you're coming from something or out of something, you'd be using the genitive case. And when you're just talking about where something is located, whether we're talking about space or time, that's going to be the dative case. So, therefore, accusative is for the direct object of the sentence, or prepositions about, you know, getting somewhere, going into the world, coming into the world, you know, arriving somewhere, okay? And, you know, a letter that you'll see real commonly associated with that, you know, this singular form right here, you got this ni on the end, right? This letter right here. Ton kosmon, ton theon, right? That's pretty common. And then the dative, okay? In the singular, remember that Yoda subscript was the telltale letter at the end of the singular dative case. That's for where things are. And then genitive, remember all those genitives in Mark 1:1? Isu, Christu, etc. With that omicron, ypsilon ending. All right, those were in the genitive case. Well, some prepositions are going to take a genitive too when it's talking about where something's coming from. All right, so hopefully this little chart helps.